heard that version of it since I originally they sent me the album. And actually, I was here at the time that it was released as a single, and it was quite a big hit. It's a lovely song. It's I've got it going through my mind. So when we were chatting and it was playing, I was trying to also have a conversation with you and trying to remember the lyrics.
Are you changing it a bit, or are you still
a little bit? Yeah, we're changing. It's going to be different. Obviously, I bring something else to it. Cliff is great in it, but Cliff is Cliff. I couldn't possibly do him, and I think he would probably be fair to say he wouldn't try and do what I do. Anyway, it's an enormous undertaking, the coming into a show that's already running, and everybody else has hit a level of performance, one that I am not near at this particular moment. I'm stumbling through. There's an awful lot. There are a lot of songs and a lot of lyrics. And the dialogue going from scene to scene to scene to scene, as I never really leave the stage, the character never is off stage. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if it's one continuous scene. So you must stay very focused and stay in it. Anyway, it's very exciting. I'm real wound up about it.
So where are you rehearsing at the moment? I mean, are you basically working it at home, or are you in rehearsal halls?
No, we are in rehearsal halls, yes, all over Greater London.
A different place every day, I suppose.
Just about, yeah. Uh-huh.
So the musical itself, just to recap, because it's quite some time since we talked about it on this program. I mean, it is basically good versus evil, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's... I think that there is indeed a very clear and subtle... message that's there, that what is going on in this planet, what exists today, I think that it drives it home pretty clearly that we are we are destroying this planet, and that we have an opportunity to live black and white and whatever race, color, creed, to live on this planet as one. And I think if anything, it kind of raises one's consciousness a little bit. It makes us a little more aware. It makes us a little more educated, if that, and makes us think. Anytime something does that, I think it's good. But what it's really about is entertainment. I mean, it's a sensational show to see, to watch.
It's very technical, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's very complex. And I don't think a show like this has ever been done. The effects are unbelievable. The first time I saw it, I absolutely... I couldn't believe it. And I have been going over to the stage periodically and going on the set itself, which John Napier, who's, I think, the best in the world, who also did Les Miserables and did Starlight. I mean, he's fantastic, and he designed all of it. And it is a spectacle, you know.
How long ago did you see it for the first time?
A couple of months ago, when I was here, I take that back. It's been less than that, about 4 weeks ago, something like that.
Mm. Which is not all that long ago.
No, it isn't.
So what did you do? You saw it once, and I mean, are you still tempted to go in and watch it over and over again?
No, I'm not.
Purposely,
yeah. I think that in order to bring yourself and who you are to something, a project, I've gone in and I had an opportunity to do this once before with a show that was already running. And I just think it confuses you, and you find yourself doing things that aren't really you for no reason at all. So I went and saw it once, and I've seen it once since. So I've seen it twice altogether. And I have to see it right before I go on, like the day or so before, just technically watching how to get on and off the stage without killing myself, as they're, you know, the whole theater changes, and it's really an experience.
Are you good at concentrating when you're in this learning period? Mm. Are you good at just being single-minded about it?
Yeah, well, I'm an actor, so I think that I mean, I've kind of honed that, and my concentration is very good. But when you're worrying about your words, your dialogue, you're worrying about oh, God, where do I go now? Where do I go next? What happens next? Which oftentimes happens the first couple of times you're in something. You find yourself leaning over to someone saying, what are we doing here? Where do we go next?
Do I turn right or left?
It's terrifying. It's terrifying.
I mean, I know you were in Joseph a couple of years back.
On Broadway, yeah.
On Broadway. But have you done a lot of musicals throughout the years?
I've done a few musicals. I've done also some straight plays as well. I began my career in after I finished high school in America with the LA Theater Company, and then I moved back to New York, and I was studying back there, and then my first show was a Broadway show. It was a musical, but I didn't really sing much in it most of the time.
Is that the one that closed pretty quickly?
Yes, yeah, closed in a couple of weeks.
That's awful, isn't it?
Well, for me, it was such a fantastic opportunity. I worked with probably the most legendary, considered to be the director of directors of the theater, George Abbott, and he gave me my first job. He's now 98, I believe. He was 80 something at the time, so or around 80. I think it was actually that long ago. Anyway, he's a wonderful man, and I saw him again in 1983 or 4, when I was giving a Tony Award away. I was actually on Broadway, and George Abbott, we were in the rehearsals for the Tony show, and I walked up the aisle of the theater. He must have been 30 rows back. It was a huge theater. He stood up. I hadn't seen him in 17, 16, 15 years. He stood up, and he said, I told you you were good. And I thought, my God, you know, it made me feel so special, so wonderful, you know, and he was so lucid and started chatting, remembered the show, all about it. He was a man.
Fantastic, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic. He was 94, 5 at the time.
No, I was just going to make the point, though, originally, that I think it's awful sometimes when so much effort is put into a show on Broadway and it closes so quickly. The critics just seem to be able to close them so fast.
Yeah, it is a pity because oftentimes, well, as we know, shows here have gotten terrible reviews. I think Starlight got bad reviews. There are lots of shows that have run, even in New York. It's more difficult to run with a bad review, particularly from the New York Times. It holds such a tremendous amount of weight. People don't realize just how much, forgetting about the cost, how much you've devoted. I know a friend of mine was writing a musical. He had done 5 workshops over a period of a year and a half. That means the actors, the dancers, the singers, the musicians. Everybody had worked in a little studio for pittance, for almost nothing, with the hopes that it was going to happen. And indeed, they got into rehearsal after 5 workshops, and it closed in one night.
That's awful.
Oh, God.
Anyway, we're going to play some music. In this case, it's a record that did very well for you. Mm. Was it last year, the year before? The Last Kiss?
Yes.
And that was really, in a way, your comeback to recording in this country.
It was indeed.
Yeah. Well, we're going to play it.
Great. Thank you.
For David Cassidy, just going back to 1985. It was number five on the charts and it's called The Last Kiss. And we'll be coming back to conversation with David Cassidy, but as you know, we like to keep you up to date with the news, and we're going over to the news desk with... When you look back in those heady days of being right at the top of the chart in terms of the pop industry, did you ever feel just like a product that was being marketed everywhere?
Very much so, yeah. See, it was all out of my control, and as we started from... me playing a character on a television series, The Partridge Family, the film company for which I worked and who produced the television series had the right to use my name and likeness and make anything out of it, me. Consequently came the lunchboxes, the dolls, the dresses, the bubblegum cards, the comic books, and on and on and on and on.
The pillowcases?
The pillowcases, the underwear were really special, the knickers. I actually was given a pair of them not too long ago with my face on them. I can only imagine what was done with them. Anyway, on to more serious matters. Yeah, it was very difficult for me at that time because I didn't have any control over it. And it was this, just like this snowball effect that just kept happening. And I certainly did perpetuate it by going and going out on tour and the concerts and everything, but it was really bigger than anything. I couldn't control it because there were so many forces there that had control of me, i.e. my record company and the television company and the marketing company and all of them. And they just, I mean, they were making millions and millions of dollars, and they had no interest whether I liked something or I thought it was right. You know, I said, listen, I don't mind doing posters and so forth, but if you're going to do something, just make it good quality stuff. And that's some of the things that they, some of the merchandise was not great, and that bothered me a lot, because I think the fans were entitled to, they were going to pay a couple of dollars or $5 or whatever it was. They should be entitled to getting something good.
How long, though, did you actually really enjoy being that much in the limelight and being mauled by these screaming women who went absolutely everywhere? How long did that enjoyment period last for?
The enjoyment of it, probably the first couple times it happened. And then after that, it became really... it just inhibited my lifestyle so much, and it became such a problem, and it became such a scene. In a way, I became kind of like the plague, and the press always picked up on it, and everywhere I went, I remember I started off my last world tour, I guess it was 70, we started off in 74, and I was in Australia, and they called it the second coming of, or they called it World War III, my arrival. You know, which, what a way to arrive in a country, you know. Gee, thanks.
It's because the hotels wouldn't take you, would they?
No, I couldn't get in hotels because they were afraid that all of those things, we forget now, helped, I don't know, it made it that much more difficult for me. And I had to be basically isolated.
I mean, what do you remember about these women camping on your doorstep? I mean, virtually living wherever you went.
Well, some of them were attractive. what I do remember about it was feeling very paranoid, feeling like I lived in a fishbowl, feeling that I could never live up to all of the press and the imagery that had been created on my behalf. I also was playing a character on television that people assumed I was this kind of white knight, this guy who never swore and he never drank, he never did anything, and he was without flaw, and I indeed as a person have many flaws. It was intimidating trying to live up to all of that, being, you know, the greatest, the world's most wonderful human, and I wasn't at all. So it was difficult for me.
Was it very lonely? I mean, all right, we can joke about the girls and that, but it was very lonely when it came to real friends.
Yeah, it was pretty lonely. I had a couple of friends that stayed with me through most of it, which really helped keep my sanity. But I finally had to get off the treadmill. I mean, as I'd done it, there was no place else I could play in the world that was going to be bigger or better. Or I don't think that in that experience I really felt I could achieve anything more than I had achieved. And remember, I had done it for almost 5 years, whereas I guess the lifespan of a pop idol, teen idol, is usually a year or if that now. But at 5 years, it had just really taken its toll on me emotionally, physically, and I just felt, and professionally. You know.
But it's good, though, isn't it, to at least to have done it? I mean, you financially, you did all right out of it.
Mm.
You had your opt-out period, and now you're back in.
Indeed.
Doing many different things.
Yeah.
So, in a way, it's in a much more controlled situation.
Oh, yeah. I think had I not retired and left the business for as long as I did and let it all boil down, and the media and everything, and I think there was a lot of skepticism about me. Well, yeah, he's just saying he's retiring, you know. David Bowie's done it 3 or 4 times, and God knows how many other people have done it. He'll be back next year, and I think they sort of scratched their head and said, he isn't back. He didn't come back. So it took a long time for me to thaw out and to decide what I really wanted to do, and that was get back and act, which is what I originally was doing before my career took such a left-hand turn.
Well, let's have a number one from those very heady days, a song called How Can I Be Sure?
Trying to use me, fly. but don't take me down. Whenever I'm away from you, my alibi is telling people I don't care for you. Maybe I'm just hanging around with my head upside down. It's a pity I can't seem to find someone who
David Cassidy and How Can I Be Sure? The one thing I'm sure of today is that he is in London, about to star in Time. He's taking over from Cliff Richard, and that show celebrates his first birthday on the 9th of April. It's been terribly successful. David, we have talked about, as I say, the very successful days of the pop industry and how you were glad to get rid of it, and you took your sabbatical, as it were. And horses really became something of a priority, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, it became an opportunity for me to, I think, get in contact with people, and with people who weren't really interested whether or not I was famous. They only really cared about what I knew about horses, which I loved, because they were really, for the first time, I was dealing with people that were looking at me and really talking to me, something I hadn't experienced in some time. So as I have always had a passion for it, I had been breeding horses since I suppose I could afford it in the early 70s. And I found a good way for me to get away and get out and start to mingle amongst people again was by going to various sales and race meetings and all around the world. And I went for the first time also without an entourage of people around me, without security guards and everything. And I found it isn't until you do it by yourself again that you can do it. You know, and sometimes it becomes a little sticky, but I had to do it. You know, it was one of those situations. I'm sure Michael Jackson eventually in his life is going to have to walk out the door by himself and walk down the street. And it's a frightening thing if you haven't been doing it and been able to do it. But he has quite a shock and surprise ahead of him.
Did you go under disguise on a lot of
occasions? I did that for a while, but it's so dumb, you know. I mean, I always felt like such a fool. Because inevitably someone would look over and go, get those dumb nose glasses off. You know, anyway, I couldn't live with that, you know. It just, I felt so silly. I just felt like a fool, so which I often do. But the horses became a great balance for me in my life. When I wasn't doing working and riding or anything, I continued my interest in the horse business as opposed to just a hobby.
And you still have, what, over 20 of them? Where do you keep them? Do you have a ranch in L.A.?
Outside of Los Angeles, yeah. And we have them at different... In America, it's slightly different because we have race meetings like Santa Anita and Hollywood Park in California. They stay there for 3 months, and then they move on to from Santa Anita to Hollywood Park for another 3 months. And we do have racing, flat racing year-round. We don't have... The steeplechasing is very, very, the hurdles, the jumps are very small meets. And only one meet in Saratoga is there really some hurdles that anybody I've ever seen.
What's you reckon it costs you a week to keep 20 odd horses?
I don't know.
Well, roughly.
Well, if you consider it costs $50 a day to train a horse at the racetrack. Now, if you have four in training, that's $200 a day. Now, I think... I'm not really sure, but I'm going to have to get back to work, otherwise I'm going to get fit.
You don't want to do the final song.
Got to keep hoofing. It's very expensive, but, I sell them as well. I don't just... It's not just a whim, and keep them. It can be an enormous funnel where you just keep pouring it down.
It's good to have a totally contrasting interest, though, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, I've met some great people in racing. And here as well, I'm going to do, hopefully, when I get a chance, because I do matinees on Friday and Saturday, I'm not going to be able to see a lot of the race meets, but I'll have them videoed on film.
You'll be able to go to Epsom one of the days.
That's true. I'm going to hopefully get out and see the Derby. Mm-hmm. If I can get back in time for the performance, I'm sure there wouldn't be exactly...
The little helicopter would get you back,
yes.
I think. And then you're going to make a film fairly soon. That's why you're only here for 3 months, isn't it?
Well, my brothers and I, yes, I start on April the 13th, and we end around July. My brothers and I are developing a movie for probably a motion picture. And we are, I would say... months away from finishing it, but I've made a commitment to them, and I have to at some point get back and do that. They're working without me now. However, they understood, and they were thrilled. I'm very close with my brothers, so it's something that we've always wanted to do. I don't think you know my brother's work over here, but my youngest brother Patrick is now starting out just on a pilot for a television series, which is sold for September. And Sean has done an awful lot of theater back in America and had his own television series. So
the Cassidys are taking over,
well,
even in this country.
Yeah, maybe. I hope so.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. A lot of the fans out there will be looking forward to seeing you in time.
Well, I hope they come and see it, and I hope you do as well.
I certainly shall, because actually it's one show that I haven't managed to catch up with yet. So
well,
I
do
will.
Before we get to Broadway with it.
Are you going to take it to Broadway?
Well, there's been some talk. I'm not sure whether I'm going to go. If I can, as I said, it depends upon my schedule, but I hope so. It's going, and maybe I'll be with it.
Thanks a lot. David Cassidy.
And a man who's been studying form terribly carefully here this afternoon is David Cassidy. He's going to stay with us this afternoon. So welcome along to the program, David.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, how many horses? Remind me how many you have of your own.
I have, at last count somewhere, I think, in excess of 25. I think I have 27.
Well, if anybody can study form today for us, I think you can. So what have you put your money on?
Well, interesting you should ask me that question. People have been asking me in the last week, who know that I'm involved in the thoroughbred business and breeding and so forth. I like Reference Point, as I think does most everybody who has watched him run and come back. I think that there are a number of horses who have a very good outside chance, and the price on them is great. I think Legal Bid, the horse that you like, he's unbeaten. The last time he ran, when the bit went through his mouth, he made all the running, and he certainly stretched out. I don't think a mile and a half will be a problem for him, and he certainly has a lot of talent. He's Henry Cecil's or Steve Coffin's second choice. Steve's a friend of mine, and he told me that he thought the other horse had the class, but he didn't really know between them that much. So it's difficult to say. I think Ascot Niter ran second to Reference Point, and is only his second run, is a terrific bet at 20-1. Entitled. Vincent O'Brien's horse, you have to say, I mean, he's done everything right. He has everything except experience going for him.
Well, I have had a little flutter in that one as well. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what happens. Terrific, because everyone's out on the lawn here to watch the race, and Warsilla has just breezed in, watching all of this with great interest. How are you?
Well, I'm not any expertise at this business. I mean, I just stick a pin in and go with it. But I was very lucky last year. I won a few bob, and I'm hoping to do the same this year.
Because Nigel Dempster gave you all your tips last year.
Yes, I nearly killed him after the first race. I betted lose him, and lose him I did.
The awful thing is that you've told everybody today about Nigel Dempster, with the result that he's been hounded wherever he has gone.
I know, but I have great faith. He's still marked me card. So in this race that's coming up, I'm going with Clantine, and I rather fancy names as well. I fancy Farmer Jock.
Farmer Jock?
Only because I've got a little boy named Jack, and it's sort of quite close.
I was thinking about you the other day, you know, when we were looking back over 20 years, particularly with the Beatles and so on. You must have fantastic memories of the 60s with them.
Terrific memories of the 60s, but it's one of those things that when you experienced them, you didn't think they were so terrific. It's not until today, you know, when you get with people like David, that you really appreciate that, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, David Cassidy was been nodding
people
away.
People say
there,
the
yeah.
same to me, David,
No. I people ask me all the time about, you know, the 60s. I of course was not making music at that time, although I was in high school and I was in bands, but I wasn't a professional. I didn't turn professional until 1969, and it was kind of over at that time. But living through it, you know, people ask you all the time about, you know, just how magical it was. And being in Southern California, where I grew up, you know, with Haight-Ashbury and all of that going on, and it really was a magical time. But it was also a very intense time, and people forget that. I think there was an awful lot of chaos going on. And it's only upon reflection, you look back upon it and you think, Jesus, I don't really think I'd like to live through that one again. I mean, the music was great, but I'm glad it's behind us.
But it's funny, actually, because, you know, when we were looking back on telly the other night to the flower power people and everything, the whole Sgt. Pepper routine brought all of that to light again.
There's this whole social and sexual revolution going on, at least in America. I wasn't here, but...
Sexual revolution? Mm. I wish they would have told me about it. I think I missed
a boat. I knew I'd set you up well there.
We thought you were the leader of all of that, Zilla.
Well, I wish somebody would have told me. Glory, you know, it was fun being part of those days. And as I said earlier, I didn't know what was happening to me. And it's only now when people, they sort of envied you.
Mm. Well, not in the 60s. I didn't really happen until the early 70s.
I know, you're not as old as me.
It might as well be.
Listen, how are you going to like this record now, David? Could it be forever? Would you like that one all right?
Yeah, that was, it was one of my first hits here. I think it was my second or third in America. But yeah, it's a good song.
We'll vote it a hit.
Oh,
let's play it. I'm terribly sorry because Nigel Havers is with us at the moment, and that's devastation time for you. You've had a rolling bid on legal bid, haven't you, for a while?
Yes, I did. I mean, with the whole school legal bid, it's going to be part of my family, all being in the law. That's the way it started, and I've had a pretty long bet on it. But
how many months?
About 3 or 4 months. However, this is what racing's all about, and I'm delighted for Gordon White, where we're standing in his enclosure, so to speak, so there's plenty of champagne flowing. However, I'm a little upset, but that's what it's all about, isn't it?
You take your losses very well, Nigel, if I may say so.
I think I'll probably have a couple of winners in the next 2 races, so it'll be all right. I'm a very optimistic man.
It was a lot, because you told me before the race that you stood to win a lot, so presumably you've lost a great deal.
Yeah, I stood to win, you know, a couple of pounds, so I've lost a pound, really, Gloria. You know what I mean, don't you?
Anyway, can I take it you've had a reasonable day out of the Derby?
I've had a wonderful day at the Derby. Also, the sun's come out, and it's wonderful to be back in England again. I've been away for a couple of months, so it's lovely to be home, and I've had a great time.
And what about David Cassidy? Have you enjoyed yourself, David? You've been leaping away from my microphone to place your bids all afternoon.
Well, I actually, I did get a little lucky on this one. I didn't have the forecast, but Steve, who's a friend of mine, told me he thought he would win, and he did, and I did make a little bit of a punt on it. So I've had a great day. I mean, it's been sensational. I want to thank you and everybody from the BBC. It's been really, really great, and I just hope I can come back again and do it maybe next
year. Cover your losses.
You must remember that, you must remember, David, I haven't met you before, it's very nice to meet you, that at the races, the bookmakers either have a good day or a really good day. So remember that from now on. So whenever you go punting again, it's being there.
I just imagine, notice, Dave, do you go from meeting to meeting?
Well, I have, because I'm in the show and I have to be there at 6 o'clock, I really, there are only a couple that I can go to. I'm going to go to Sandown and I'm going to go to Kempton later on in the year. Other than that, that's really the only racing I'm going to be able to do while I'm in the show, you know, in time.
So you're on stage this evening with time.
I am. I'm about to catch a helicopter and go back, and for those of you who are coming, I'll be there in good form, I hope.
Actually, the last time I talked to you, you were just about to go into the show. How are you liking the discipline of night after night?
Well, I've done an awful lot of theater in my life, and I frankly respond very well to the discipline. I think I need it. It's good. It's, you know, the audiences have been great, and then, you know, the show is wonderful. So I'm in it for another month or so. If you have any curiosity about coming to see me or it, please do.
There was some talk about you taking it to Broadway eventually. Is that coming off?
Well, it's definitely going, and they've talked to me about it. I've got a couple of other commitments later on in the year and early in 88. I don't know whether or not it will coincide with, you know, my schedule, but it's a great show, and it's been great fun to me.
Of course, you've got a few horses to feed when you go home tonight, haven't you?
I do, back in America. I think I'll give him a ring and give him the good news about today, anyway. Anyway, thank you so much. It's been sensational.
Well, it's been wonderful. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. And how...